breaking fucking news. The Omicron variant, or the moron variant, is here in Dallas. Just dropped today. It's in a couple counties near me. I am sufficiently fucking scared. Time to wear all my fucking masks out in public and look like a total bitch like I am. I knew it. I knew that shit was coming. The midterm variant is fucking killing it over here, and like we have like two cases and they happen to be vaccinated, but it's still something you gotta worry about because it's a pandemic of the unvaccinated, even though the new variant is only for vaccinated people. But hey, what the fuck do I know? I'm just a fucking idiot. What's up, dude? Welcome to the fucking show, dudes and dudettes. I am the dissident in chief, as you can probably tell because you clicked on the fucking podcast. It says dissident in chief. I am the dissident in chief, JP. And I have a guest today, but first, let me give you some background on him. He is the vice chair of the Anne Arundel County Libertarian Party of Maryland. I'm pretty sure I butchered the fuck up out of that name, so you'll correct me here in a little bit, but it is suburban agorist Brian. What the fuck is up, brother?
What the fuck is going on, dude?
Please, I know you told me how to fucking say your county name, but like you're gonna have to correct it just for the record because I'm a fucking idiot. Like, help me out here.
It is pronounced Anne Arundel. Funny enough, there was this show called like Drugs Inc. or something, and they did an episode in Maryland about the heroin epidemic that goes on around here. And the announcer announced it in Arundel County. And ever since then, I have to call it in Arundel County.
Yeah, it's almost like a fucking inside joke where you're like, yeah, it's kind of weird. And then people mispronounce it all the time. So you kind of got to just fucking roll with it kind of thing.
Yeah, it was one of the names of the lords and lasses of yore. That's where all these names, all these counties in Maryland. Baltimore and Anne Arundel and Queen Anne's and all that shit. It's all
royalty and their names.
We love monarchy, right?
Of course. But before we get into any of this content, I have breaking news, at least for this channel. It's like 2 hours old, which everyone fucking knows by now probably, but by the time this comes out, there's going to be several memes that are going to be fantastic. I can already predict it. They're going to be fantastic, like Trump, fantastic. Anyway, the breaking news is that Jussie Smollett was found guilty, or Jussie Smollett, whatever the fuck his name is. He was found guilty on 5 out of 6 charges for making shit up. That's a legal term, by the way, making shit up. They found his attackers and he got justice for his attackers. And as Ben Shapiro on Twitter said, ladies and gentlemen, we got him. So reaction to that, brother?
I think he deserved it because what a douchebag move. I actually forgot that it happened because it was so absurd. And it was pretty obvious, and things came out like right after the fact. And I actually didn't even realize it was going to court until the decision was made today. So my question to you is, what are his charges? I know he got found on 5 out of 6 counts, but what are his charges?
They didn't get the he got like the whole lying to police thing. There was one of them, like, that didn't get was, like, a felony, like, making shit up charge or something like that. It was, like, 5, like, misdemeanor, wasting police resources or something, whatever the official word is for that, like, wasting their time, resources, manpower.
What was his sentencing?
Oh, they just found him guilty. Okay, so no sentencing. We don't know what he's going to be sentencing.
So, what do you know what he's facing? What kind of is he facing? Any potential time?
I mean, the worst case I saw was like that I saw on like CNN, which I know Communist News Network, but again, if they're saying this, it's probably even higher. So, but they're saying like a max of 3 years, which
holy shit
ain't going to happen. Which excuse me. That ain't going to happen, but
No, that's still, not it would happen. Be. He'll get like some community service, PBJ for a year, and but I think it's safe to assume that his acting career is probably finished. Right? That's what he was. He was an actor, right?
Yeah, he was like an actor slash singer on. The fucking.
Is he like a Broadway singer or something? High School Musical.
Possibly, I don't. I know he was just one of those like teeny, like one of those singer types that like it was on Empire. That's what it was. It was a show on Fox. Which, by the way, the story of like so the official narrative, which apparently people are supposed to believe this, is that white supremacists were in Chicago with MAGA hats. There's two things. White supremacists in Chicago with MAGA hats were going around shouting racial slurs in Chicago, by the way. When it's fucking cold outside, because it's Chicago in January. So, four things. Recognized an actor from a predominantly black cast of Empire, because white supremacists are huge fans of basic cable that have nothing but black people on it. And they recognized an actor from a show that they totally watch, because they're white supremacists, they totally watch all black cast shows, and then assaulted him, but did not damage the Subway sandwich that he was walking in negative 10 degree weather in to go get. These are all the things that you have to believe for this to be true. And you'll wonder why people call bullshit pretty fucking quickly.
Yeah, didn't they both have Make America Great hats on? Like both of them?
They did. According to his story, like, they did.
It couldn't have been like more obvious that this was just a complete setup. Like, I remember when it happened, and like they kind of put the facts out there, and I was just like, there's no way this actually happened. There's no way that there's angry white supremacists in Chicago in January that are walking around the street looking for random black people, especially ones that are on a show, and to beat them up. It's comical. It's really comical. And the fact that
and according to them is that they said he said they recognized him from that show. Oh, you're that according to him, you're that little queer from Empire.
Is that what they, again, quote unquote, said?
That's according to him.
So he was playing it double. Again,
super plausible. Yes, super plausible, of course. Oh yeah. That, again, the entire series of events, it gets more preposterous the further down you go. And it's just, and now they found, we do have justice for Juicy Smollier. We have found his attackers guilty in court.
So,
and I'm telling you, like, the memes are already pretty good, but it's getting better.
So what do you think what do you think his motive, like, what do you think he wanted to gain out of things? Right? Because it had to be just personal gain. There's no way he did this to try to, you know, bring attention to white supremacists being against gay black men. Like,
he wanted to be a victim. That's the only thing that makes sense, because it's like, because we do know the left likes to play the victim and the evil culture is against us kind of thing, and they like to do that. And then it's, again, broad generalization, but they fucking earned it, so fuck them. So that's the only real reason that makes sense, aside from just, because it's not even narcissism, because he doesn't look good in this. It looks like he got beat up by two fucking idiots.
Is this
bitches.
Narcissism? Like, does he just want the attention? But I don't know, something ain't right with that guy. if if this is, I don't know, if he was trying to bring light to a narrative or, you know, make a statement, I'm assuming that he is relatively wealthy. There's so much more that he could have done with much less effort without having to fake it and beat up to bring light to situations. Between BLM and the LGBTQ community lately, I mean, they've really made great strides in the past decade. So why not just try to do what everybody else is doing and just keep the course, you know, put up the good fight and, you know, do things right. And if you have the capital means to do it, then put your money where your heart is. Right. It's funny as shit, but at the same time, it's really fucking sad because this guy could actually be doing good stuff and he's not. He's faking getting beat up by a bunch of his friends that look, you know, dress as white supremacists. I mean, that's not a good look, especially if you're trying to push a narrative that just fucks it all up. So I know the left isn't going to give this like a blink their eyes at it because it doesn't fit their narrative. That's a loss for us. They're going to fucking hide it, but it's kind of telling to how the left narrative and the mindset is, right? They're the fucking racist. They do racist things just to say that they're not racist. Suburban Karen mom saying that, you know, the plight of the black man is X. Bitch, you live in a fucking $1 million home and you don't work, right? Like, what the fuck do you know about the plight of the black man? I don't know the plight of the black man. I'm not a black man and I'm not plighted. So I can say what helps me, but I don't know what the fuck helps black people. So it just plays into that leftist narrative of, oh, I know best what's best for everybody. You don't fucking know what's best for anybody. You don't know what's best for your goddamn neighbor. You don't know what kind of situation your neighbor's in. So it's that kind of just shows the mentality of the left lately that they love these generalizations and these blanket policies. And it shows in the way that they write policies and implement them.
Yeah. And I mean, it's you kind of nailed it. Like, generalities, they like generalities and blanket statements and stuff because collectivists really like when things are simple. And that's just because when you are collectivists, it's really easy for things to be simple. When you paint in broad strokes and other good things. Yeah,
when you have this collective mindset, it dumbs people down for one, and then it allows really nasty negative thoughts to kind of bounce between all these people. Like, oh, you say one negative thing, then you say one negative thing, and then you say one negative thing. Then by the time it gets to me, it's this giant fucking snowball, and I feel like I need to do something about it. That's what happens when you have a collective mindset, and that's why I always say collective mindsets are dangerous because you're not thinking for yourself. You're thinking for the greater good in your eyes. And the greater good doesn't give a shit about you. So just focus on your goddamn self and promote individualism. And that's my message for the night. Goodbye.
Well, that was a great show. I'm just kidding. We got a lot more to go, but so fucking Dallas is in the news as well, because apparently I knew I was in a liberal hellhole, but now it's like a weird combination of like police statism and fucking bullshit, because they just, the Dallas PD just straight up fucking stole some broad that was like 25 and traveling from the airport with no crime, $100,000 from her. And they literally said it was civil asset forfeiture, but they haven't arrested her for any crime. And then it was breathlessly fucking reported on like CBS without any fucking context. And then
actually the only reason I saw it was because Spike Cohen put it on Twitter today or yesterday or something like that. If it wasn't for that, I would not have seen that at all. So they didn't charge this woman with anything, right? And whatever airline that you're flying, there's no regulation to the amount of cash that you can either carry on or have in your checked-in luggage, right? Is there an amount?
Right. I don't think so. Like, they don't right. state and anything like that.
Woman, like this. So we wonder how, like, we wonder where our taxes go. And then sometimes if you like where I am, my property tax for my property, they give me this cute little pie chart, and it tells me where, you know, this portion of my property tax goes to, you know, schools, roads, because my roads, some other fucking shit that it could just be paid for by voluntary means. But so I get that breakdown. But you can kind of see that there's discrepancies in, you know, the amount of work that you can see in your community versus the amount that you pay in taxes. And you know that you're paying a lot in taxes, but you know that these contractors are charging the government exorbitant prices for this work. So where is this being made up? It's being made up by instances like this, when I'm guessing it was customs that took the $100,000.
I mean, it was at an airport, which I've gone to several times because there's like two here that are major. And it was the Dallas PD, because I guess they staff, like, they have like people, they have a presence there at all times because it's an airport, whatever, security state, blah, so blah,
if,
blah.
If you see, like, if Dallas starts seeing some like drones and a couple of like, you know, night vision goggles on their SWAT teams, then we'll know where that money came from, right? Because it doesn't just it gets put aside for evidence. No, that doesn't happen. Baltimore actually is going through a whole thing where they just found out that the police department in Baltimore City has been mishandling civil asset forfeiture cash horribly. They don't keep track of it at all. They don't even know where it is. So it's safe to assume that they're taking this cash into evidence, that the cops are, and then they're just putting it in their fucking pocket because nobody's paying attention to where it is. They're not keeping track of it. So either this is going into the PD's military armament fund, or it's going into those guys' fucking pockets. The couple guys that I did see the picture, it was like a picture of like a bunch of stacks of cash on the table with a canine on it, right? Yeah. I mean, a couple stacks definitely ended up in this cop's pockets. There's no way it didn't. I mean, it's they're corrupt people already, so they're going to steal this woman's cash. And then it could have been $120,000. Two guys, they split 10 grand and then just report 100 grand. So, and then there's no charge. There's no basis for it. What? Why did they even take it? Why did they even search it in that manner? So,
well, because they're like, oh, it's suspicious that you have that much cash. And it's not like, okay, like, again, I'm not the biggest fan of this, but like, if she has like 100 grand and then like three like bricks of cocaine in her fucking luggage, like, I'm not the biggest fan of that, but like, I fucking get it. Like, okay, this makes sense in a logical way that, okay, they stole all the cash, but also she had like three bricks of cocaine. I get that, even though if I don't agree with it. There was none of that. Otherwise, they would have fucking said something. Because it looks really fucking bad. And then the one that fucking hurts me is that, well, it doesn't hurt me, it just doesn't surprise me, that like CBS fucking reported, the local outfits for CBS reported that here. And essentially, they just throated the government dick on it. And then, of course, if you try to accuse them of that, they're like, well, we're just reporting the facts, straight and simple. And it's like, well, no, you could have done what you normally do if you don't approve of the actions of the police or the governor or the state official, and just say like, the Dallas police, which has been marred in controversy based off of privacy concerns in their database warehouse, Critics say they stole $100,000 from a poor woman of color in the airport the other
day. Was she black?
I think she's Mexican.
So that's even more. I mean, not that it makes it really worse, because it's the indiscriminate profiling that they're allowed to do. And then the theft that they're allowed to do, and they have the state behind them to back that. It's very frustrating when you hear these kind of things, because that is completely unconstitutional, if you want to put it that way, if we want to go the constitutional route. And
yeah,
to essentially punish somebody for no crime. There's nothing been charged. She wasn't detained. She was detained. Obviously, she got searched, but she wasn't arrested. She wasn't charged with anything. And now she's going to have to go through the court processes and all this fucking bullshit is all it is. All this red tape to get her property back. And that property that could have been, she could have sold a house in another country, a property that she owned, and she sold it in cash and then came home. And she might need that money to, to do other things. But the state doesn't fucking care. They see it as, especially a minority carrying cash through an airport in a large sum. And she must be doing something nefarious. She has to be doing something that's illegal. Is it immoral? Probably not. But the law says that it's illegal. So we have to steal this woman's money until she can prove her innocence. And that's not how the law is supposed to work. We're innocent until proven guilty. Civil asset forfeiture is the complete opposite of that statement that we were raised that you were innocent. Everybody's innocent until proven guilty. Stealing my cash, stealing my property until due process is done. That's not how it's supposed to work.
Amen and a woman. But yes, that's you kind of just nailed it. It's fucking theft, and the fact that like our fucking local media like will paint this as fine, but then
redistricting is racist, possibly.
It just makes me. It makes me just want to like shoot myself in the fucking head, because it's.
Yeah,
which totally I think is the goal. They want to kill all of us.
Are you guys redistricting?
But yeah,
redistricting in Texas.
In Texas, and one of the most contentious redistricting plots by our state Republicans, that of course the Democrats are bitching about, is in DFW. Oh yeah, because of course
we are also
why not?
Redistricting in Maryland. Maryland is considered, I think, one of the most, if not the most, gerrymandered states in the country. You can look at our current districting map, and you don't even have to know that much about Maryland. You can just base it off the geography of the state, and you can see how they drew these lines and how just blatantly obvious they are, that they try to encapsulate the poor minorities into one district and the middle to upper class whites in another district. And just like any other democratically run state, is that the leftist areas, the Democratic districts, they have such a higher population that they pretty much run the state, even though the geographic area of what they control is fractions of what the red parts of the state control. And we're actually redistricting it now, and they're doing it even worse. It's hard to explain it without a map, because Maryland is shaped so strangely. But the Democrats right now are just pretty much trying to extend their reach, because more people have moved out of the city being Baltimore. It's the only city we have in Maryland. So we call it the city. So more and more people are moving out of the city, but they're taking their Democratic ideals with them into the counties. So the Democratic reach is starting to to creep out from Baltimore City. So we're dealing with the same thing. We have douchebag Hogan. He's fighting against it, but he's a fucking douchebag. So he just fights against anything the Democrats do right now, even if it makes sense, because he's trying to run for president or senator, some bullshit that he's not going to win. It's going to be a waste of time for him, but I hope he wastes his time. So that's a big point of contention in Maryland right now, is redistricting, because it can really play a huge impact in, you know, where they're pretty much trying to separate the Republican areas so that they can control the money of the left in these counties, while also having the minorities in the cities and in the more urban areas.
I was going to say, sounds like you really like Larry Hogan. Tell me about him. Tell him about your lover, Larry Hogan, there, because I don't know a whole hell of a lot about him, but he's sound, from what I've heard you talk about him before, he is a Republican, but as bad of a Republican as possibly like Dan Crenshaw, but maybe worse.
He isn't a neocon. He's not a neocon Republican, and to that I give him some credit. But I'm sure if we were to, like, you know, vamp up for war, he'd be right behind him. So Hogan is actually like the chair of like the Governors Association. So he kind of has a lot of say, at least especially with the COVID thing. He was the chair of that. So he was kind of facilitating a lot of the decisions that a lot of governors were making during the lockdowns and mandates and all that shit. So I did like Larry Hogan a little bit, because he did do, I mean, we're a Democratic state and he's a Republican, and he got elected governor and reelected. So he was doing some things right. He was kind of being a good mediator, a good middle ground, and kind of pulling from the left, pulling from the right, and kind of making some stuff actually happen in Maryland. But as time went on, you know, he was horrible with gun laws. As a Republican, absolutely dreadful with gun laws. I think Maryland has like an F by the NRA, but fuck the NRA. But, you know, that's a grading system that we can relate to. And then the whole COVID thing happened, and he went full leftist. He shut shit down. Masks. He even went so as far to take unapproved funds to buy testing kits from South Korea, where his wife is from. And about, I don't know, like a third or half of them ended up being faulty. So he wasted a bunch of state funds, but he didn't care because he said, oh, it's for the greater good. So he went from being a moderate Republican to a fucking Democrat leftist. And then now that COVID's coming to an end, and more importantly, his term is coming to an end, he is a Republican again. And he says, we are not going to mandate masks again. We're not going to lock down again. You know, he's being harsh on the left again. All this stupid shit. He's vetoing everything the Democrats come out with in the state, because he's wants higher party recognition. He wants to be president, I think, but, you know, maybe senator or something like that. So he's being a Republican again, but he's being a fucking shit ass Republican, because if you're going to be kind of Ron DeSantosing, you know, the mentality of COVID right now, then be a Republican about fucking guns, because guns suck in this fucking state. You know, we have to have a background check for rifle, long rifles, shotguns. You good luck getting a carry permit, unless you have a credible hit on your life. So if you have a hit against your life, that's kind of the only way to get a carry permit, unless you like own a gas station, so you carry large sums of cash. But even being a business owner is not enough to get a carry license in there. He doesn't give a shit about any of that. So, yeah, I have my qualms with Larry Hogan. I'm sorry to rant about him, but there's so many people that love him and that revere him because of his moderacy, but his moderacy has led to subpar situations in our state that just balance the line all the time and don't actually make a decision in anything.
Yeah, subpar. Yeah, the glorified moderate, which is the grand compromise, is all right. The solutions are subpar at best and actively harmful at worst. Great. Nothing actually good. It's just all fucking mediocre bullshit. Like, I mean, I wish I could say I don't relate. So where was I after you had your fucking phone die, you fucking geriatric millennial like me? I knew it. I was gonna say we're talking about Maryland, and I was talking about Texas and having the yep. And then I have an Abbott over here. Wheels is he's quite the interesting character because he's like really posturing like socially conservative and like fiscally conservative ish, but also locked people down for more months than I'm comfortable with, which is more than one.
And the bounties on abortions.
Like, he yeah, the whole bounties weird on abortions thing is, it's fucking stupid, but, you know. And then he's trying to posture like that, but then he's, like, pretending that, like, him and DeSantis are, like, homies when it comes to lockdowns, when it's like, motherfucker, I lived here, and it was like fucking months that I couldn't go inside a building, only until like fucking July or August of 2020 before like everyone was kind of cool with like shit. Like fuck off. Like I get it. I get that your lockdown policies are better than a lot of governors, but like, I don't give partial credit.
We're not playing horseshoes or hand grenades here.
Like it's a, I mean, the guy that's like trying to primary him for governor, Don Huffines, like he was kind of weird, but that's another story. Like weird politically. He's like, the only tweet that I think was actually pretty based of him was like, in the fight for freedom, and in the COVID regime, that's only a pass fail credit course. You got to fail. And so I'm like, that's fine. It's just, but yeah, Don Huffines is trying to primary Abbott and he's going to lose because what the fuck you, exactly. And also he's like, what's really weird is that like, he says he wants to get rid of the fucking state income tax, but property taxes, which are fucking stupid, crazy high in Texas. But also on the same thing, we'll like renege on it in the same fucking like bullet point on his website. So that's weird. And then also is like wanting to restart building the wall because he's a Trump guy. And that's questionable, but you know, it's, he's just trying for the super Trump guy.
So is that going to fail? How long is Trump actually going to have any sort of authority over these Republicans? Like, are they going to have to wait until he loses in 2024 for them to be like, okay, Trump Republicanism doesn't fucking work. Let's, you know, go back to the drawing board. Like, how much longer are we going to have to deal with these Trump-tards until we can just like move on to the next idiot that we have to deal with?
The next moron in chief. Like me. Yeah. It's going to be, I think it's going to take a Trump being shellacked in either the primary or the general of 2024 before a lot of these Trump tards figure it the fuck out. Maybe they won't, and that's fine, because I mean, whatever, man, like it worked. You had lightning in a bottle and you couldn't fucking recreate it, so sorry about it. But
he was wrong
anyway. I was trying to get back to oh really, no way. QAnon, the ones that keep pushing back the date for Robert F. Kennedy Jr. to come back, or more Trump to and Trump to come back to presidency. They keep pushing that date back. I think it's like the seventh time they push it back.
Do you remember like going from 1999 to 2000? All these people saying that, you know, that everything was going to crash. All the world's computers were going to crash. You know, the Y2K was going to be the apocalypse. You remember that?
I remember it somewhat.
It's like, oh, this, we don't know what the world's computers are going to do at, you know, at midnight on, you know, January 1st, 2000. They weren't computed, quote unquote, computed for that date. So is everything going to come crash? That's what Q exactly reminds me of. It's just like this, this nonsensical, fucking joke of a group of people.
So, question though, on a subject change, back to Maryland. When I think of Maryland, the first thing that comes up is crabs.
That's great.
No, not STDs, heroin, so but like good. Actual crabs. See, that's what I think of, is that like, I think of like, aside from like Alaska, I think of like people in Maryland going out in schooners and fucking getting crabs. Like, how accurate is that? Like, is there that much like crab going on?
Crab going on
to where it's just
the crabs are everywhere. It's so I grew up, the family I grew up in, we never bought crabs. If you wanted crabs, you had to go fucking catch them. So that's what we would do. We would go get sun blistered and fucking salty and gross and dirty, and when you were old enough, drunk as shit. And you would get as many crabs as you can get. Sometimes you would get maybe a dozen. Other times you do really good and get a bushel and head in before, you know, noontime. And then you're come back and you're drunk as hell and you're sunburnt and you're salty. And then you cook up crabs and you just drink more beer and just hang out and eat the spoils of your labor for the day. So, yeah, crabs are they're big. Big thing in the culture in Maryland, and they really are everywhere. They've gotten really expensive in the past 2 years since COVID. Not that they weren't expensive before if you were to buy them. But yeah, crabs really are as prevalent as you would think in Maryland.
Nice. But speaking of like seafood, Mike, I don't know. I could cut this out maybe. Just depends on if you're fine with me revealing that I know that you were a chef in a past life. I figured that was fine. But yeah, you were a chef in a life before what we do now. What you do now, you were a chef. And as somebody who has lived with people that were lifers in the restaurant industry, like pick a fucking job in a restaurant and they've done it all the time. Like, what are the stereotypes that restaurant people get that are either fair or unfair? Because I know there's several that are fair stereotypes and there's several that are unfair. Like, which ones do you think are like the most fair and the least
most
fair?
That we're all drunks. Because we are.
Yeah. Yep.
And I say we in the past tense, what I used to life before this. Cocaine is super prevalent. And it is. That's totally fair. You know, when you're working 15 hours a day, sometimes that's the only way you make it through to the end of the day.
Six days a week.
Yeah, luckily where I spent most of my time as a chef, we were closed on Mondays, so we had that one day off. But yeah, so alcoholism, cocaine use, do I even need to say cannabis use? That should go without saying.
That just goes across industries to a bunch of different places at this point.
Some of the most hardworking fucking people. And it fucking bummed me out when COVID happened. Granted, I wasn't in the industry anymore, but I could imagine if I was. And I felt for those people that just got their livelihoods just fucking ripped out from underneath their feet. Just the government just came in and said, nope, fuck you. You don't have a fucking job anymore. That could have been me. It could have been me if I kept doing it. Luckily, better opportunities arose for me. But yeah, it's fair to say that alcoholism, cocaine, and hard work, that's very fair assumptions. Unfair assumptions are crackheads. I've met very few crackheads in the restaurant industry.
even in the back of the house? Are you sure about that?
I've known
people that were on drugs, but not necessarily crack.
It can. So dishwashers on crack or meth, yes. Cooks, chefs, no. Servers, crack, yeah, not meth. They could work on crack, not meth. so that, and then unfair. a lot of people assume that people in the restaurant industry don't want to like grow up. It's kind of seen as a young person's job when it really isn't. If you really take that job seriously, you know, you could, a maitre d' can make $120K a year, a salary job at a really fucking good restaurant, right? So you can be a maitre d', you can be a sommelier, an excellent server, an excellent bartender, you know, a chef. Actually, the back of the house makes way less money in these kind of environments than the front of the house. So it can be an industry of professionals, of people that really care, that don't only care about making money. They care about the experience that people have. They want their wine and beers to be good and match their food and things like that. People actually give a shit. They care that, you know, that wine really pairs well with that steak. So like, don't Applebee's isn't like, not shit on Applebee's guys, because they work their asses off. But you know, there are aspects in the culinary and in the restaurant industry that people really fucking care, and that's all they do. They only want the customer to be happy. They don't want to send out, you know, shit food and have to remake it. As a chef, getting no comment is the best thing you can ask for. Sure, it's nice when people say things are good, but do they really mean it? Are they just saying that because they see you? But when somebody sits down, eats, and fucking leaves, that is the ultimate compliment to a cook and to a chef, is when you just don't say shit. You just eat it. You eat it all. You clean your plate and you go home.
Hell yeah, man. Like, it also seems like one of those jobs where, like, my God, when you're saying like 15 hour days, like, I know, like, I never worked in a restaurant aside from maybe DJing in a restaurant, like, here and there, but like, or technically a restaurant, but like, fucking, like, those hours that like the people put in there is just, it's outrageous. And with like, and essentially no breaks, especially when it gets to like anytime close to like your meal times, like lunch, dinner, like not breaking at all during that.
That's why part. Industry people, and that's what we all, I say we again in the past tense, but refer to ourselves as industry people. You say, are you in the industry? That's all you need to say, and that they know that you're in the service industry. You're back of house, front of house, maybe you work at a hotel, but that's the hospitality industry is the industry. So you would see, you know, you can really relate to these people across the board. And now that I don't work in a restaurant anymore, when I go to restaurants, I still just do shit, thinking that I still work in a restaurant, right? I still stack up my plates for the server and shit like that, because their job's hard as shit. and they're underappreciated. And especially this past 2 years, they've had their livelihood ripped from them. So be nice to your servers, be nice to your cooks, treat them well.
Hell yeah, man. Also, I'm going to do another hard cut because I don't know how to do transitions correctly. And sometimes they just fucking don't appear. But yeah, I grab a beer while I make this fucking transition into you being the suburban agorist about 45 minutes into a podcast. We finally get to understand what your name really means. About suburban agorist.
So the reason I chose that as my common handle for things, I've been a libertarian for a long time. When I say long time, I say longer than a lot of people that I meet, which kind of surprises me. I've been a registered libertarian for 13 years, which isn't as long as some people, but it's longer than a lot of people. And then when I decided to get active about a year ago, like actually active in the party, I quickly realized that politically, yeah, I'm a libertarian, but philosophically, practically, I'm not a libertarian. I don't believe in the state at all. I don't think the state should exist at all. Libertarianism does afford the state some sort of existence in its documents, I guess you could say. Kind of a minarchist society, government society. And I quickly realized that no matter what you do to politically fight the state, you can't win. We can't elect our way to freedom. people don't vote. People don't care. And the same groups keep getting voted in time and time again. The Libertarian Party has existed for 50 years now. We've had one or two people in Senate that are libertarians, I think. And Justin Amash changed to libertarian once he was elected as a Republican. Does that really even count? I don't think so. So I've had a really hard time with justifying putting in a lot of effort into the Libertarian Party lately. And that's why I've led to agorism. I'm a big fan of James Corbett. That's my go-to podcast. I listen to him and I listen to your podcast because his shit is so fucking heavy. Yeah. His shit is so fucking heavy that you got to take breaks from him, right? Because it's black pill, black pill, black pill, black pill. And it's a lot, but it's, people need to listen to it.
Corbett reported like a heavy on like
super quality,
really quality information, but like also very like it's not gonna fucking like hold back. It's gonna hurt your fucking feelings sometimes. Yeah, that kind of shit. Where it's just like, goddamn.
Yeah, you're gonna be driving if you're driving. Or I've had days where I've listened to him at work and stuff like that, and them in driving home and just driving home in silence, just it because the amount of information and the seriousness of the information is so heavy. So he is kind of the one that led me to anarchism. He lives in Japan, so he's not a libertarian. He speaks a lot of libertarian ideas, and he speaks to libertarians in the States all the time, but he's an anarchist. First and foremost, and I found out about agorism through him, and he, you know, agorism was coined by Samuel Edward Conkin III in the 70s. I think it was 74. And the whole premise behind agorism is completely ignoring the state, especially as far as economy goes. And it's not to say that you're going to actively fight against the state. You're just going to actively ignore the state. So the big thing about agorism is counter economics. It's having an economic system that works outside the constructs of the current economic system. And it doesn't have to completely go against the economic system. It can work alongside it in certain aspects, but it's counter economics is the big thing. But it's also, practicing practical anarchism, not renewing your licenses and registrations and not getting certificate for things and, building firearms at home, whether you mill out a lower yourself or 3D print parts yourself. So agorism is really, it's in anarcho-capitalism, but it kind of brings locality, volunteerism, kind of community, counter economics, kind of all into that fold. Because the thing about anarcho-capitalism is that it tends to, by its nature, it promotes corporations and monopolies. I went through a period where I was like, okay, if a corporation is a monopoly in a free market system, then they're doing the right things, right? They're providing their necessities, the customers getting the best service or product they can get at the cheapest rate. But that's not how it works, right? Capitalism is what it is. It's capital. It's gaining capital. And agorism is beyond capital. It's beyond currency. You don't need a currency to facilitate trade. A currency helps when people don't have a skill or a trade or a product that they can trade for, but it takes away the necessity for a currency. It allows for people to interact with each other in an economic fashion, as well as a social fashion. And I guess a little history is the word agora comes from the ancient Roman. The agora was the marketplace. It was a gathering place. It was where, people would put on street performances and people would sell their produce or goods or things like that. And it wasn't run by the state. The Roman state had nothing to do with this. These were just people voluntarily coming together in a location to provide services and goods to each other without any state backing or coercion or input or anything at all. No taxes, no regulations, nothing. People were able to do what they wanted to do with their money or with their goods as they saw was fair. And to me, that is what makes the most sense to me. I understand that we live in modern times. We have all this technology and shit like that. But at the same time, we have lost sight of what it is to be neighbors, to what it is to have a sense of community. So that I just try to push that, and I push it not just, in my words, but in my actions. I'm always trying to get my Libertarian Party to actually do libertarian things, to do anarchist things, agorist things. And it does work, right? You start showing people how you can slowly practice libertarianism, anarchism, agorism. And they realize that, holy shit, I can do more than just going to these monthly meetings and voting for something. I can just little things, right? Little things that you do, interacting with local communities, interacting with your friends, with your small businesses. That's really what agorism is, especially in the modern times with the way things are. I'm ranting, but there is a sense of agorism in metaverses. And I know, like, Sal the Agorist, he promotes metaverses because, it's decentralized. But I feel like agorism actually has the human aspect into it. It's coming face to face with people, with your neighbors, you know, sharing a smile and shaking hands and then, you know, commencing trade and going about that. So my definition of agorism isn't necessarily everybody's definition of agorism. But I think it basically comes down to small community, counter economics, and having a network of people that you can trust, that you can physically walk to and say, hey, I need your help, or hey, I need this, or can you help me? You know what I mean? It's just building a sense of community that's local. It's very local. You got to get back to the times where you don't have to drive 300 miles, you know, to go do something, right? We need to bring everything back local. And that way we can decentralize, show people that we don't need an oversight. We don't need centralization. We don't need a federal government. We don't even need a state government. Let's break it down even past a state government. Let's go past county governments. Let's just bring it to communities. Let's incorporate communities and set our own laws, our own taxes, if we need be, your own economic fucking systems. Like we can do this. It's something that can be done. It's just we need to start fucking doing
it. Yeah, it's super interesting that you bring up the whole, like, the sense of community and everything, because a lot of times, like in my experience, most people think that, like, in general, that anarchists essentially just want to, like, the classic version, and besides the stupid version of, like, fucking leftists in Oregon that say they're anarchists, but they're really not. They're just fucking deranged communists. But the ones that, like, want to go live on a fucking mountain by themselves, like mountain men, anarchists kind of thing, that's the typical one. And you're kind of, you're almost breaking the barrier that's saying that, like, no, like, you don't have to, like, just, like, live on a fucking mountain by yourself and fucking just fuck, like, live on a farm out in the middle of nowhere with, like, a wife and seven kids, like, fucking Auntie Anne, like, Annie Anne, fucking, oh, God, Little House on the Prairie bullshit. Like, it's, you can do it in a fucking neighborhood, which, by the way, the name Suburban Agorist, the first time I heard it, it was almost like an anarchist that got, like, neutered by, like, the fucking homeowners association. Like, it was like, you know what I mean? It's like the fucking, like, I used to be an anarchist, but then the HOA fees, I gotta pay those. I gotta fucking, like, make sure my fence doesn't go over 18 inches. You know what I mean? And then, like, I want to live in a society, like, I want to have my wife and 2.5 but kids. But
really, that's what it is. Except you're opposite. I moved to the suburb. Well, I always lived in the suburbs. But if I had my choice now, I would live on the side of a mountain by myself, away from people. But we moved to the suburbs first, and then I became an anarchist. Yeah, I'm an anarchist stuck in the suburbs, but I recognize that most people do live in a urban or suburban environment. And just because you live in a higher density location doesn't mean that you can't be an anarchist or an agorist and practice those ideals.
The hashtag in a society motherfuckers.
You live in the society that you want. If you want to live in, so let's just take the suburbs as an example. If you live in the suburbs, you can choose to not talk to any of your neighbors. That's fine. You have that right. However, wouldn't it be more advantageous to you and your neighbors if you have a skill, which I'm assuming you do because you own a home in the suburbs, so you probably make okay money doing something that takes some amount of skill. So wouldn't it just make sense to network with your neighbors who are probably also relatively successful, know people, do things, and that's what it is. It's networking, and it's networking from their closest proximity. Technology makes it great. I know you and I were on Clubhouse a good bit, and that's great for networking. I mean, we would have never met each other if it weren't for Clubhouse. It's fucking awesome. But at the same time, like, how many people that you talk to on Clubhouse actually know their neighbor? Right. So it's getting back to the organic, to me, it's getting back to the organic way of talking to people. It's, you know, having a cup of coffee with somebody, getting a cup of coffee.
I see your boss. See your fucking boss. You sure you're not from fucking Boston? Oh, God. Which, I'm not going to lie. Baltimore just, I grew up on, I saw The Wire. Okay. Yeah. Is that accurate? Like, I know it's, everyone knows it's a shithole, but like, The Wire almost made it seem cooler than it was.
The Wire made it look cleaner than it was.
Yeah, that's pretty accurate. Like, I know The Wire was like,
yeah, actually,
goddamn, now almost 20 years old.
The creator of The Wire used to come into the restaurant that I was a chef at all the time. His wife and his daughter would come in at least twice a week for dinner. They just lived right around the corner. So that's kind of funny that you mentioned that, because I cook for him all the time. Really cool dude. Super down to earth. His wife was even cooler, and his little daughter, she was, you know, 5-ish, 6-ish. You know, she was coming in when I was working there. She was between like 4 and like 7 years old. And she was just a hoot of a little girl. She was so cool. But yeah, it's really accurate. And it's not just the African American aspect of like the first season. But also the stevedore aspect of it in season 2, I think it was, which actually was what my family came from. I'm my descendants are from Poland. I'm fifth generation American. The first two generations that were here, they were stevedores in Baltimore, in the port of Baltimore. So season 2 actually kind of hit home for me, because if my dad didn't get out of the city when he did, that could have been me, right? That 100% could have been my living situation. And it's very accurate to the living situation at the time for a lot of Polish communities in Baltimore that didn't get out of Baltimore in the 60s and 70s. So yeah, the Wire is very much accurate between the complexity of the gang hierarchy, the savageness, the violence. Yeah, it's pretty fucking accurate. Baltimore is not a town that, as a white person, that you want to just drive around in. You got to kind of know where you're going. It's okay to go through certain areas, because that's the only way to get to certain, like the Maryland Zoo in Baltimore City. The only way to get to the Maryland Zoo is to go through the fucking hood. But yeah, they know that everybody's going through that part of the hood to go to the zoo, so you don't get fucked with. Like, it's not like they just indiscriminately fuck with people. It's a lot of gang violence, not just random robberies. It does happen. I know a guy that worked at a neighboring restaurant who actually got murdered when I was living in the city. Because they saw him pull some cash out of the ATM, or they saw him buy some cookies with $100 bill because he's a bartender. So they shot him in the stomach twice, fled to Pennsylvania. They ended up finding him. It was 3 people. So it's not to say that these acts of violence don't happen. They do. But
they generally reserve it for their, it's a lot the people they're beefing murders, with in gangs.
Walking down the side of the street.
Like it any really other,
like any other big city, like so much publication and notoriety in a bad way, obviously, because it is a small city and the population isn't that large, but the amount of shootings and murders that do happen is proportionally high for the population.
I mean, it's the same way in fucking Dallas, where, like, Fair Park, which has like the Cotton Bowl and everything, and it's a real big attraction where the state fair is for Texas and all that. It's surrounded by a pretty gnarly, not super gnarly, but like gnarly for the city of Dallas area of like super poor, pretty gang ridden. Like, and people know that. And it's just like, if I mean, I know how to drive through there and know what streets not to fucking go down and what streets are fine. Like, it's just, it's probably similar. It's just like, you know where to go and where not to go. Like, and it's not like, don't go down here or you'll get shot kind of places. But like, there's definitely areas of Dallas that like, I wouldn't go there if I wasn't.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm living in the city. I lived in Baltimore for 4 years. And you're eventually going to end up going through a part of Baltimore that you shouldn't be going through. Which happened to me more than one occasion, typically because my phone died and I don't fucking know where to go. So I'm just going to drive because I'm just a white boy from the suburbs up in the city. And ended up in some definitely not good areas, but didn't have any issues. And I was more than likely to get pulled over by police because they probably think I'm just looking for drugs than to actually have something like a violent act happen to me from somebody that lives in the neighborhood. So living in Baltimore for 4 years, I was actually there during the Freddie Gray riots. I was never scared living in the city. Now that I'm a country boy again, I don't like driving to the city anymore. But living there, no, I got used to it. You know where to go, where not to go. Baltimore is a beautiful city that is fucking rich of history. It's just been run so horribly, so horribly. It's so corrupt, and the elected officials do not give a flying fuck about their constituents. And you have the current mayor Brandon Scott. He's pushing UBI. So I mean, exactly.
He's politically retarded. Like, we know
he's,
that
he's not been good for Baltimore at all. They had the chance to vote in a Democratic moderate who actually hosts on a, I guess, somewhat conservative radio station that I listen to, talk radio station. They actually have Spike Cohen on a good bit. They could have had this guy on who is very rational. He's African American. He understands the plight of inner city Baltimore, but they wanted the guy that had the Marxist ideas and wanted to do UBI and control every aspect of people's lives, and now they're fucking feeling it. And Baltimore City is not any safer. It's not any more prosperous. Businesses are still closing down, leaving. You have businesses that are holding taxes from the city until the violence gets resolved. It was a collective of businesses in Fells Point that were withholding their taxes to the city until the crime rate decreased. So you see these hardcore leftist ideals just not working. Violence isn't going down. People are moving out of the city. And now you see it affecting my county because they're trying to make it gerrymandered to make it more Democratic. So, and actually now, Governor Hogan announced the other day that he is sending in state police into the Baltimore City. So the state police have full jurisdiction over Baltimore City now. So it's just getting more centralized, more control, because the state's taking over the city now because it's just gotten so bad.
And then, speaking of things going bad, like, I'll probably end on this point, like, with just a little dialogue about this, because I feel like a lot of like agorists, anarchists, libertarians, all of the ones that are like pretty much not anti, well, we are anti-government, but not in a violent way, obviously, but
Wink, wink.
Most of us are pretty much convinced that, like, you know.
Wink, wink.
In Minecraft, ATF. Right?
Wink, wink.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah. I would basically just say, I love you, ATF, if you are watching this. I actually don't. Your job is fucking stupid. But yeah, if you're watching this and you work for the ATF, fucking quit. Because what the fuck are you doing being a Fed? And also, you can make more money doing private security at a fucking nice hotel.
Cool guns, just let me know and I'll print them for you.
There you go. But when it comes to like the what all of us like liberty leaning anarchists, you know, those R types about the collapse of society or the monetary system or like the food supply, supply chains, all that stuff. Like, as people like us who say that, like, oh, the national debt's going to fucking kill it. There's going to be the end of our country. The debt's out of control. The inflation's going to go into hyperinflation. Like, what are like practical things that like you can, that like, if you would recommend doing now to where like, in case it does come, it becomes a lot easier when like if we run into a period of like shortages, hyperinflation, lawlessness in the cities, like because of lack of funding to the police, blah, 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 you know, like that kind of thing, like general, like society wide, like problem in an area, well, or something.
Yeah.
Like,
if you, I'll start off,
you know what I mean?
You're in, at least if you're in a urban area and you feel like this might happen soon, get out. You don't want to live in an urban environment when quote unquote society falls. That's the first place that there's going to be violence, looting, murder, rape. Yeah, right. All the horrible things, because everybody's so just naturally congregated because, you know, they're in a city. If you're in a suburb, get to know your fucking neighbors, right? You want to know
No way. Almost like you are do that already and you're like, yeah, this is a good idea, because if the end comes, you want to have your neighbors exactly. Be like fucking homies.
My neighbors and a couple of other neighbors throughout so I live on a peninsula, which is beneficial to me. Because there's one way in, one way out. We already know what we're doing. And this is how I know I'm not crazy, because I have my normie neighbors that also kind of think about this stuff. If shit were to go down, we know where the choke off point is, and we know where we need to focus our efforts. If we were to try to, you know, protect our community in a type of, you know, fall of society scenario. So for suburban people, I say get to know your neighbors. For rural people, I'm not a rural person, but I talk to enough to know that you need to set up your perimeter defenses, have at least a fence so that that a line is drawn, and that if anybody has any respect for private property, a fence might deter them, say, you know, okay, this is not where I can go and set up camp. But your perimeter defenses, just in the sense of fencing and things like that, but really just defend yourself, right? Because really in a rural environment, once people start getting desperate, that's where they're going to start going. And they're going to come to you in numbers, because they're all going to be concentrated because they've been run out of the higher population areas that they've come from. So as far as defense and preparation mentality, that's kind of for all three kind of areas. It's kind of what I think about. But practically what you can start doing anywhere you live, especially I'm going to be primarily talking about some urban suburban environments, is start growing your own food. Grow a crop. If it, you know, grow a crop and then get your neighbors to grow other stuff. You grow potatoes, he grows tomatoes, she grows cucumbers, you know what I mean? Start building your own economy within your community so that you can really have a single crop that you can flourish, that you're a master tomato grower, and then your neighbor can grow the best fucking cucumbers. And then your other neighbor has turkeys, your other neighbor has chickens, your other neighbor has this. And then before you know it, you have an agorist society without even really thinking about it. It's a strategical way to think that, you know, if you can, even in your own community, if you can decentralize everything, even your own food supply in a fall of society kind of scenario, then you're well off. It things wouldn't really change for you. If you can set up these things now and just get into that lifestyle of not having to rely on corporations, supermarkets, Amazon to get you your goods, then you're winning, right? So really what I can say is to prepare for like the fall of society. Obviously get ammo, obviously get guns, start growing your own food, grow it and preserve it, can it, freeze it, and start trading it, start practicing animal husbandry. If you have just a little bit of property, get chickens. Don't worry about getting licensure for having fucking chickens in your yard. Like in my county, I just went and talked to my neighbors. They were all cool with it. And I've had chickens for 2 years. County's never knocked on my door, never sent me a letter, because I talked to my neighbors. They're cool with it. And so they never called. So animal husbandry is a big thing. Chickens are great. They just lay eggs. You don't ever have to eat the meat. You don't have to worry about slaughtering chickens if you don't want to, because you can get the protein, you can get the amino acids, you can get the fatty, the fats from it, the protein, everything from the chicken egg. So it's really start practicing what our great grandparents did. Just grow your own food, practice canning and preserving. Use this time now while we have it to get good at these things. You know, try taking, you know, a couple cuts of beef and try preserving it in salt. Just try it, because now is the time to waste, right? If you're going to waste anything in a learning process, now's the time. Not when you need to try to preserve a deer carcass that you've shot and killed and were able to successfully break down. But now you need to preserve it, but we don't have electricity, so you need to salt cure everything. Well, fucking learn how to salt cure everything. It's just these, it's the quote unquote wild conspiracy theorist kind of prepper mentality, is that if it's ever been more prevalent to practice these things, it's now, because things aren't going to get better. They're not. They're going to get worse before they get better. So be prepared for the worst that's to come, and you won't have to worry. Get on alternate communications. I'm going to sound like a statist, but get your ham operator license. Because if not, then the feds can come triangulate you and come after you before you ever get a chance to get good at it. So I say get a license so you can actually practice using a ham radio. You know, start with a handheld ham radio with a nice antenna. Just listen in to conversations. It's not illegal to listen in. Listen in, get used to the frequencies. Write them down. Find your local frequencies for emergencies, police, fire, so that even just a natural disaster, that you're not lost. If phone lines and power lines go down, what are you going to do? There's not going to be any cell phones. So if you were to have just a handheld ham radio, you could listen to emergency services. Every state and locale has government-funded emergency services. And you can relay messages on those repeaters in the case of emergency without any repercussions, without any cost, without any energy other than like the battery that your handheld radio can can put out. So communication is a big thing. Get used to or learn basic field medic operations. You know, learn how to close up a wound or plug a gunshot wound. You know, how to take care of somebody that potentially has a concussion and that you can't get them to a nice, quiet, calm, dark room with tons of water and make sure they don't go to sleep and things like that. Like, start thinking about this crazy fucking shit, because if that does go off, you need to be prepared. Because if you already have this mentality, I want you after shit goes down, because if you are already thinking this way, I want you on my team. So I need you to survive through the worst of it. When guns start coming out and people start going crazy, I want you to be able to survive that so that we can start rebuilding society. Like, it's a super nihilist way to kind of think about society and the future, but it's better to be prepared than unprepared. It's not to say that you need to carry a medic pack when you're going to dinner with your family, but keep a bag in your truck when you go to work, right? With medical supplies, emergency supply of water, maybe emergency meal, you know, backup communications, backup power source, a firearm, right? Start carrying a firearm every day. If you're in a state that doesn't allow a pistol carry, then put a rifle in your fucking truck. And you know, if you feel comfortable, follow the laws so that your ammo and your magazine and your rifle are all separate in your truck. But just carry the fucking rifle in your truck, because you could be driving home from work one day and shit goes down and you have to ditch your truck and you still need to get home to your family. So you need to start thinking about these things. People need to start thinking about these things, and not in a paranoia kind of way, in a practical kind of way. These are things that wouldn't hurt for you to practice any day anyway, or have this education or have this knowledge. So,
yeah, especially like if you're, it doesn't even have to be like end of society. It could be like, oh, like exactly. What happened in Texas this past February when there's exactly. ice all over the fucking place for like a week and a half. Like,
so that would have been a great opportunity to at least know how to use a ham radio, know what frequency to go to for your area, find out what the fuck is going on. And if you really need something, you could relay a message on the emergency channel. So,
and if you don't have your food, and if you have like some canned food you just happen to have, you just started trying it a couple months ago, and then like, oh shit, well, I guess I can't go to the grocery store because trucks can't get in to refill them. Well, I got some canned shit here. I'm fine for about five or six days.
I can make tomato soup, and I'm sure I got some bread and a little bit of cheese. I can have tomato soup and grilled cheese for the next 2 days until I can get to the store again. Like, even little things like that. And you'll start realizing the practicality of all this stuff because you'll start working these things into your day-to-day life. Okay, I preserve, you know, I canned this shit 8 months ago. It's time to start eating it. So let's make a pot of chili with all these tomatoes that we canned 8 months ago. You know, so it's a practical thing. It's rewarding. It makes sense, right? You got to prepare for the worst case scenario. And if you just started preparing when like COVID got bad, then good for you. At least you started. If you start tomorrow, good for you. You're already ahead of a lot of people. It's never too late to prepare. I hate it when people say, oh, if you're not prepared, then, you know, too late. It's never too late to prepare, because people have been prepping, you know, in modern society since the fucking 50s, 60s, 70s. And we haven't reached that point yet. So don't be paranoid about it, but just think about it and try to incorporate it into your life.
Well, absolutely, brother. And with that, I think I might have to let you go for this one, man. It was a fun conversation. we talked like almost nothing related to politics and for like
the entire
time, which is the way I like it. Because fuck all this fuck all this politics bullshit. Makes us go fucking crazy, but it's so important that we do. But anyway, much appreciated. And Suburban Agorist Brian, again, thank you, sir, for coming on the show. And fuck yeah, man. Hopefully I made you laugh. Maybe I made some racist jokes. That's all good. I didn't drop any N-words, so it's all good, baby. Woo!
You can find me on Clubhouse at Suburban Agorist and Twitter at Suburban Agorist.
Yeah, I was going to say, give me your plugs, bro. Thank you for reminding me. Like, is that pretty much your platforms that you can actually stay on?
Yeah, Facebook blacklisted me. They actually went after my wife, and she had to send in her ID info because they banned her, thinking that it was me. So yeah, I'm completely off of Facebook now. Twitter at Suburban Agorist, capital S. Everything else is lowercase. Same with Clubhouse. I don't plan on getting on like Getter. I don't plan on it because fuck that shit. Twitter's my last thing. Let's see, what else do I have? Anything else to plug? That's pretty much it. I think that's it. It's been pretty quiet around here these past couple of months.
Hell yeah, bro. But yeah, again, appreciate you coming on, and then see you on fucking Clubhouse in a little bit, probably. But yeah.
All right, man. Have a good one.
Yes, sir.